The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
There's a worsening shortage of general practitioners in Ireland. That's according to new research by the Irish College of General Practitioners. And the WHO says a satisfactory level of care requires a ratio of 100 GPs per 100,000 people. And according to the research, only two counties, Galway and Waterford, meet that WHO standard. Galway-based GP Dr. Brian Higgins from Galway Primary Care is on the line. Brian, good morning.
Hi, Pat. Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
So you've loads of GPs to cover you in Galway.
Unfortunately, I wish that was the case. And it's great that we have more GPs per capita than other counties. But certainly, I think if you ask anybody moving into Galway at the minute, they're finding it just as hard to find a GP as any other county. So I don't think those stats reflect the reality.
Now, the WHO number is 100 per 100,000. You have 102. So, it's not a very comfortable margin.
No, it's not a comfortable margin. And I think when you look at those statistics, I think that's the number of GPs that you need to be able to deliver, you know, a reasonable standard of care to the patients of the area. But unfortunately, that doesn't facilitate the fact that all of our kind of major urban areas are growing. So while it means that we can thankfully provide a good standard of care to the patients we already have, it still means that new patients moving to the area are finding it incredibly difficult to find a GP.
Now, one supposes that the WHO information is based on, if you like, a normal demographic, the normal proportion of young people, of babies, of teenagers, and of older people. But in Ireland, of course, we have an aging demographic, and in some parts of the country, more older people, and therefore a bigger demand for GP care.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of factors with that. One of the positive things is we have better technology, we have better medication, we're better able to manage our patients, but the delivery of that care has become more complex. And then as our patients age, they have more complex needs. So you have this increasing of complexity on both sides, which sometimes means that we have more of a need to see our doctors or see them more frequently, and the appointments might be a little bit more complicated. So it can be difficult to, how would you say, reach and the demands of those care while still looking after your entire patient demographic. Because as we know, our young kids get sick maybe 8 to 12 times a year, so we have to manage the acute care so that when someone's unwell, they can pick up the phone and see their doctor within a reasonable time, as well as managing these complex chronic diseases on our patients.
Now, the other aspect of Ireland, which makes it a bit different maybe to many developed countries, is population density. If we look at the island beside us, which is maybe, what, 3 or 4 times bigger than us, but a population that is more than 10 times our population, you can see how sparsely populated that parts of Ireland have to be. And that is a real challenge for GP cover.
Absolutely. I think rural areas, we're very fortunate in Galway insofar as it's probably easier to attract patients, attract colleagues to come and work in an urban centre where you have the sea beside you, you have a nice university, you have some great restaurants. Like, it's a weather aside, it's a wonderful place to work. It's quite a difficult thing in rural areas where maybe you're looking at practices that have one GP working on his own or her own and then not able to get any cover so they can even take their holidays. And when GPs are coming out of their training, I think it's probably a little bit more attractive to them to join a larger centre like mine, where there's no concern about being able to take your holidays or out of hours cover, as opposed to being recruited to a rural area, which, looking at the population, might actually need you more, but just trying to figure out your quality of life and being able to spend time with your family and even take your holidays.
Okay, so
might be as much of a possibility.
The move for many people graduating from GP training is towards group practices. There's another element too, that you may have X number of GPs in any particular county, and then you have to ask, how many of them are full-time GPs? How many are doing 2 days a week? They may have other concerns, yeah, by the way. I'm not saying that they could be working in a hospital setting for 3 days a week and as a GP for 2 days a week. It doesn't mean they're full-time.
And the other factor with that as well is, if you went back to see a GP 10 years ago, that GP is probably seeing maybe 40 patients a day. The patients are coming with maybe one issue per consultation. And now what's happening, probably because there's a bit of a longer wait to see your GP, patients are thinking, oh, well, I'm not going to see the GP again very easily. So I better talk to him about two or three things. And as a result, GP consultations have gotten quite a little bit longer. So each individual GP, instead of seeing maybe 40 patients a day, is seeing now on average 24 patients a day. And that's probably pushing out the waiting times as well a little bit, simply because our capacity to see patients when the care gets more complicated has to reduce.
Now, Brian, what about the training of GPs? We're told there's a 20% increase this year, but it takes a while for that to filter through to actual service on the ground.
I think it takes a time to filter through. And while I think it's important to train more GPs, I think ensuring that you're retaining the GPs you've trained is more important. I don't know the percentage of GPs that decide not to work in full time, or maybe decide to emigrate, or maybe transition to maybe working in different types of care settings outside of GP, because the general practice training in Ireland is excellent, but unfortunately it makes our GP trainees very attractive to other industries or other parts of medicine that may not be traditional general practice. So I don't think the right thing is to just increase the number of GP trainees. I think what you have to do is really incentivize these GPs to work in general practice. If half of our GPs are leaving, there's no point half of a larger number of GPs leaving.
So how do you incentivize it? What does it require? I mean, for an individual young GP going into GP practice, how do you incentivize them to stay in Ireland and to stay in the sector?
Well, I'm glad the main decisions I have to make are just about patient care, because I think those decisions are much more difficult and much more complicated. I do think trying to make sure that people have a good quality of life, that they're able to take time off, and also that there's reasonable administrative demands on our GPs. Like, for every hour a GP works, it creates about 20 minutes of admin work. I think GPs are sometimes used as a safety net for the rest of the health service. And as that health service is dysfunctioning, unfortunately, it creates more non-clinical work for GPs when it comes to patients being taken off hospital outpatient lists, or long delays for hospitals to be seen. Even some of the proposed changes in pharmacy, allowing the pharmacist to prescribe, if the GPs are going to be having to, you know, sign off on those prescriptions or manage the admin, being informed by the GPs that this is being happened elsewhere, what it means is we're spending more of our time doing paperwork and not looking after our patients. And that's the last thing any of us got into this job today.
Stephen Donnelly, the minister, in a recent interview where he was defending the massive increase in spending and manpower in the HSE, and talking about the hospital consultants, that you were better off being seen privately and being operated on privately than in the public sector, because the productivity in the public sector was appalling. And you can see the reasons for that, you know, lists being cancelled at the last moment because the appropriate crewing are not there. But at the end of it, he said, we traditionally have a healthcare system that provides you with care when you get sick. Guess what? That's a really expensive way of providing care. The much more cost-effective way of providing care is to keep people as healthy as possible for as long as possible, a preventative care model. And that, of course, goes back to the GP.
Of course, but you also can't blindfold yourself to the people who are sick at the minute. There's been issues with this country where we've maybe neglected long-term strategies for short-term benefit, but you still have to deal with those problems in front of you. And it's fantastic that we're recruiting more consultant colleagues. But traditionally, if you recruited a consultant was recruited in the past, that consultant was recruited with a team that allowed them to deliver care. And unfortunately, that hasn't happened recently. So while it may look good on paper that there's an expansion of these consultants, unfortunately, if you don't have a team that allows that person to work, or even space for that person to work or operate in, it's a lip service.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the criticisms, that they increase the recruitment of consultants and then those very consultants can't get theatre space to perform operations and don't have the appropriate staff to help them do that.
let alone whatever about theatre space, even office space. So when I have a, if I send a referral to a consultant, again, a lot of the time it's a conversation. I might be asking them to see the patient or might be asking them for advice. And if that consultant doesn't have an office or a computer to work on to see those referrals, they can't do their job. So it's also unfair to blame them for the waiting list or the inefficiencies.
Okay, now some of the texts that are coming in. The government keeps adding more people to the lists eligible for free GP care, but what good is that if you can't access a GP? Another one, it's so hard to get a GP appointment in Dublin. This wasn't always the case. When you did get one, it was always rushed and you could only ask about one thing. Have you come across that phenomenon where GPs are charging by the question? You know, you come in for a consultation about your ingrowing toenail, but you also have a strep throat and you're charged twice because you have two conditions that need attention.
I think that's very rare, a rare thing to happen. When I have a consultation, there is a reality of there's the patient in front of me, but also there's the rest of the patients who are booking in to see me. And what we're doing is we do as much as we can with the time that we have available. Sometimes what somebody will come in with a list of maybe 10, 15 or 20 questions that maybe might be traditionally things that people would have asked a friend or a family member or even have checked on Google, and there can be a certain element of, oh doc, while I have you.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes what's happening is that some GPs are doing that just to try and make sure that actually, because I can do maybe two things well in a consultation or 10 things badly. And I would much rather do two things well and have that person
Some GPs have a time limiting thing. You know, you've got your 15 minutes and you can discuss that. And if you need another 15 minutes, well, then you pay. I'll read you some more of the stuff. I was recently told I had a very low B12. I paid for the visit, the blood test and the 6 vials of B12. I was then asked to pay every time I got the jab, once a week for 6 weeks. If I paid up front, I'd only be charged €300 for a simple needle that takes 2 seconds, over €400 for something I needed badly. They are rip-off merchants. Now, I don't really understand all of that, but if you need B12 shots, if you go to the GP, I presume you're taking up their time and you're expected to pay for that time.
So when you, for some patients have a condition called pernicious anemia where they can't absorb vitamin B12. So what will happen is that patient will come in, they'll generally have fatigue, we'll do some blood tests, we'll see their B12 is low, and they will need 5 injections over a 2-week period and then 1 injection every 3 months. For the rest of their life. We have to, generally when those injections are given, they're given by our nurse. And obviously we have to pay our nursing staff to be there. And that's one of the struggles sometimes that we have. And I think it's very reasonable because when half the population is getting visits for free and the other half have to pay, I think what it's causing is a little bit of resentment that patients have to come back and pay for a service that other people are maybe getting for free. But the truth of the matter is we have to pay our nurses to be there to give those injections. And generally they're a cheap visit, but it still has to be funded. So unfortunately for patients for whom we don't get funding from the state to deliver their care, they will have to pay out of pocket for visits.
Okay, some more. I'm from Dublin, but I now live in Spain. My brother lives in Tala and he still has to go to Clondalkin to see our old GP. No GP is taking new patients on in Tala. In Spain, I text my doctor's office and get a same day appointment. Another one says there's a shortage of GPs, school places and creche places, no primary care centre, unreliable bus connect service in the huge growing population of Adamstown in the Lucan area. I know of several GP practices near me where women in particular are working part-time. That is understandable, but it distorts the statistics of GP numbers. It takes 2 or 3 weeks to get a GP appointment in my town, by which time you've either recovered or you're much worse. That's from Joe. Mm-hmm. That question of females and part-timers, really the stats should be measured in full-time equivalents, shouldn't they, rather than individual people?
Exactly. We consider a full-time equivalent generally GP who's working 4 clinical days a week and 1 admin day. Okay. So I think what we call FTEs is a better measure. I think we're incredibly lucky that, you know, GPs are still choosing to work even a couple of sessions a week. You know, if it wasn't for those those generally female GPs, but men and women do in a couple of sessions, we'd be in serious trouble. So I think we should be thankful for any of the sessions that they do choose to do. Because again, they could easily take jobs that or in other facilities or other areas of medicine that may be a bit less complex and have a bit less demands than general practice.
GP Dr. Brian Higgins from Galway Primary Care. Brian, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.